Rabbi Neuberger is has a few positions at the OU. He's a co-director with Rabbi Zwicka on the flavor department. You remember the story I told you, Rabbi Juravel, of the Heimische Hechsher that said, a flavor darf ochel hubena hechsher. And yes, a flavor needs a hechsher. Rabbi Neuberger will tell you how complicated giving a hechsher on a flavor is. And he's also the co-director, together with Rabbi Morrison, who you met already, in the ingredient department, the ingredient approval registry department. But I think his focus today will be primarily on flavors. Rabbi Neuberger.
Thank you. Do you have the, what are you?
The handout.
The handout.
I don't know if, I hope they brought it with them. It's in the, those who have the books. You need one for yourself?
Yeah, I'll look on. Okay.
Where is it? What page?
L1 to L42.
L40, okay. You're giving them a bechina? I mean, Blue Grant said they get a bechina.
That's that is there
an
extra one?
I'll bring you. I have one. So I'll bring
you. You can swing around. Thank you. Okay, good morning. Okay, feel free at any time to interrupt me if you have questions.
We will.
Okay. So you have a pretty good idea as to what I do here. Primarily I'm involved with flavors, also with ingredient approval. What exactly is a flavor? How do they make them? And how do you go and run a kosher program in a flavor house? A flavor is a compound. That means it's made up of numerous different items. It'll be either a liquid state or a powder state, as a rule. It'll be then used by the bakery soda manufacturer at usually amounts of around 2%. Not because they couldn't use it at lesser amounts. It would be potent at lesser amounts. However, they find that the people who work in the factories have a difficult time dealing with smaller amounts. Therefore, they have to go and do it at exactly those amounts. A flavor will be made up of many different raw materials that come from different places in the world, unique items. Every flavor company will have its unique niche of how they do things. We don't ask them to go and give us the percents, the amounts of it, but they will have their unique manner in how they go and add the ingredients. The percents will be different, the amounts will be different.
Because you don't do it.
Right. We don't go and ask them to go and disclose to us their the amounts of the ingredients. We discourage them to do it. It's to our benefit not to always have all of the confidential information, because once you have confidential information, if I lose my laptop, there'll be a $5 million award to go and get it back. A flavor house has, as a rule, about 3,000 ingredients, approved raw materials. They're all, these 3,000 raw materials need to be approved as GRAS, generally accepted as safe. Thank you. Generally recognized as safe for food ingestion. They're all members of FEMA. FEMA is not part of the federal government, but FEMA actually is an organization of the flavor manufacturers. They actually had a FEMA of the flavor manufacturers. They had a conference going on at some point, and it was during the hurricanes going on down in Florida. They said, how can you have a FEMA conference going on when you have all these hurricanes going on and all this? Anyways, no, so this is the organization of the flavor manufacturers. So there are 3,000 raw materials that they accept as for usage in flavors. As far as kosher goes, we analyze these raw materials on a case-by-case basis, and we analyze whether they would be require hashgacha or not. If they require hashgacha, so then they need to go and only purchase it according to what we tell them, the approved sources. They need to also check those raw materials when they're received into the facility to see that they meet their kosher specifications, because otherwise, who says that the middleman or the distributor who they're buying from will deliver as they're supposed to. So that's the first line of defense. So you have 3,000 raw materials. They send us on a formula-by-formula basis. We certify products, flavors for them. They send it to me. It'll have a product name, a product number. It'll have the basic manufacturing directions. Some of them give me very detailed manufacturing directives. I'll be looking to see whether there's any heat involved in the processing. I'll look if there's any kovish involved. Heat includes what's called reactions or heating above yatsa lettuce.
You mentioned approved ingredients on a recipe by recipe basis. There's no set schedule, right?
There is a schedule A developed based upon those formulas that they have sent to us in the past. They then use that in the future for their developers, their flavorists, develop new flavors. And they also use that list for their receiving department and their purchasing department. However, we do not go and allow, being we're dealing with a facility which will have Parv, Milchix, Treif in the same facility, you can't go and just say, oh, just pick off the list off the Schedule A and you can go make a product and we'll certify it for you, because you have a mixed facility. So you must go and certify only on a flavor-by-flavor basis. So they'll send to me a formula, they'll have in it the manufacturing directions, meaning name, right, all that jazz. They'll also have in it the ingredients. For the ingredients, I go and have worked together with them that they should have from their own system, based upon what we've told them in the past, the Schedule A, the information, kosher requirements for that ingredient. I've worked together with the companies to the point that they already have worked out within their system that they know beforehand, before they send it to me, whether or not it's going to fly. And they'll go and they'll give me the ingredient number. That's how they relate to all of them, the ingredient name. Some of them also will give me what's called the CAS number, chemical number, which will go and help me identify ingredients which might be new, right? Something that I don't recognize, especially recognizing that you're dealing with flavor companies who each one of them has to go and have their special way of going and making things or whatever. They'll also give to me their kosher specification, the kosher parv. That would all be on there. It's all based upon their Schedule A. At times I'll go and call them and say, hey, this isn't in line with the Schedule A, and they will go and revise their system, send the formula from their system, and then based upon that be able to give them approval on that. We would then certify a formula either as parv or dairy, very rarely as meat, and requiring signature, meaning the Mashiach actually needs to be there for the production, based upon whether the koshering needs to be done or if they have what's called compatible ingredients, that they have the same ingredient, kosher, non-kosher. Any ingredient that they have the same ingredient, kosher, non-kosher, in the facility, we need to have the Mashgiach there when they use the kosher version. Otherwise, we don't have a control of that. Any questions? Yeah, compatible ingredients are a very dangerous thing to go and have kosher, non-kosher in the facility of the same ingredient. Very often companies will say, well, there's no way we can go and substitute because we have a raw material code specified for this ingredient. We can never substitute a different one. You know, it's too dangerous for us to go and have that. We need to have the Mashgiach present when they go and use the kosher version.
How many productions may be going on at the same time?
It depends on the facility. You'll have... I don't know. It depends on the facility. You could have 20 different things going on, because you'll have liquid compounding, which is sometimes done by hand, meaning they'll be metering out a milliliter of this, a milliliter of that, 2 milliliters of this. or you can have it done by machine. They actually have automated machines made by companies, usually from Europe, Van Wyck and things like that. Those are the name of the manufacturers of the automated dispensers. And these automated dispensers each have dedicated lines from the ingredient holding tanks going all the way to dispensers. And they retire these machines if they get what we would call a leaky nose, if anything drips, because then you have cross-contamination from one product to the next, and the whole thing's out of bottle. You can't use it any longer. But, if you have those automated machines, they can just set it up and have one operator going and watching that it's working correctly, and it can go and make its, 30 pours in a couple of minutes, whatever. And then they'll have dry blending going on as well. They'll also have what's called spray drying. Spray drying is a concept that you take a liquid that you want to go and encapsulate, to go and have a carrier, dried onto a carrier. You mix it together with a starch, which is going to be the carrier of the flavor that you want to dry. And then they will go in, basically blow it through a atomizer. Atomizer makes it into very small particles, atoms. That's why they call it an atomizer. We're in a large chamber which has a lot of hot air going through it at very quick speed, so it dries very quickly from a liquid state to a powder.
Atomizer is a type of spray dryer?
No, atomizer
does the same thing?
No, atomizer is part of the spray dryer. It's the spray nozzle. It's basically somewhat similar to a spray head, but instead of going, atomizer spins around very quickly, and it has the liquid emulsion, which is the mixture of the starch, the carrier, whatever, together with the flavor component, will go and come out of it very quickly. That's a one kind of... Anyways, the reason why they would spray dry some products is it'll have a longer shelf life. Sometimes it's too volatile, the flavor, meaning volatile, it'll come off too quickly into the air, and it'll smell up everything else on the truck that they're carrying.
You're saying why they spray dry as opposed to shipping it as a liquid?
It's as a liquid. Why would they need to encapsulate it and put on? And those are the kinds of reasons why they will do spray drying. Some customers prefer it if they're going mixing it in. They want it in a powder form, not in a liquid form. They also do other kinds of encapsulation. Sometimes they'll do it in gelatin. Sometimes they'll do something like extrusion. Extrusion is using an extruder. If you have an extruder, you ever see the... I don't know. Exactly, when people make noodles, or if you ever see people making chopped liver.
Meat grinder.
Okay, fine. I guess I'm dating myself. So you use what's called an extruder. Basically, the machine which will go in and chop it up into very fine pieces, push it through a form, comes through like a luxion. So you have these 3,000 ingredients. They send us the formulas on a case-by-case basis. We certify it. We have the mashgiach coming in. Most places will be doing a koshering once a week on certain pieces of equipment. They'll then go into kosher campaigns, and then they'll either continue for the rest of the week going parv, milchix, and then to treif, and then kosher again, be down over the weekend, clean before the weekend, be down over the weekend, and then kosher again on Monday morning, where they'll go on a two-week cycle, depending on the place, depending on the equipment. The mashgiach is going to have be coming in regularly to go and check while they're in the campaigns. He's going to have a lot of knowledge about what is going on, the scheduling of the facility, on each piece of equipment, where it's up to, and what it's going to be doing. Question?
So these types of mashgiach seem to have to be more knowledgeable, I'm saying, than typical mashgiach is coming to check regular factories, because it seems that it's a lot of technical things that he's done before this.
No, the most important thing is to communicate well. It's, you know, it sounds like a very everyone's saying the same thing, and it sounds like, oh, what's the big deal? Communicate well. Meaning you have to really understand what's going on in the facility. And then once you understand well what's going on in the facility, so then you can understand, okay, what are you going to be doing, which piece of equipment?
What do you do till you get there?
What?
It seems obviously the flavors mushkiach has to be much more involved on the day-to-day basis.
It has to be very involved. Right.
If
I have a more difficult facility, difficult usually means not necessarily the place which is the largest, but difficult is that I've had issues with communication, that I say one thing and they don't hear me. So what I try to do is I have different mashgichim coming in, because everyone looks at things differently. And, you know, no one's going to go and have the same har, and everyone's on top of things differently. And also, they work together. You know, the different mashgichim will come in, they communicate with each other, okay, we kashered this, make sure this piece of equipment is not being used, and this and that. And,
why do you just, like, situation they're not listening to you?
How do you deal with it?
Yeah, why?
Sometimes the case is, you can say, okay, you're not doing what you're supposed to, we're going to walk away from it, right? Sometimes you say, you're not doing what you're supposed to, we're going to have to really be on top of make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to. And if we're able to go and do that, that's what we do as a rule. If you're able to be on top of it.
How often do you have to cash the spray dryer?
They'll go into campaigns, depending on the case. Meaning, it depends how often they're going in there, going through their sequencing. They'll go through a campaign, meaning they'll go kasher on a Monday. I always insist it should be on a Monday, so we don't have any time for them to go and not have any binyamay. Kasher on a Monday, you then go in through their sequencing, parv milchik strafe.
Is that a common standard all over paramilk strafes? I mean, it makes sense, but is that common standard?
What do you mean, Ms. Hagler?
I mean, a lot of companies do it like that.
Yeah, you want to know, I've had certain companies, hashgachas, they call me up and they say, you know, we want to go and know, we understand that this facility has different spray dryers. And one spray dryer, they always keep kosher parv because they do large volumes of that kind. And other dryers, they sequence. We would prefer that the product that's being made for our customer come from the one that they don't kosher, because it's
right.
Just better for us, even though you're koshering the spray dryer in a binyama and you have a good procedure for it.
Right.
But we'd prefer it. So I can't go and pass on that information myself, and Mashgiach doesn't either have that right. I can go and ask the company, are you willing for me to disclose this to your customer so that they can go and satisfy their customer? If they allow it, I can go and tell them. If I can't, I can't.
But you will
do it every week, the spray dryer?
Excuse me?
Saying that in 1 week, that's the sequence?
So
spray dryers are difficult to cash in.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they would be cashing the spray dryers.
How big are they?
It depends on the facility, it depends on the spray dryer, you know?
I mentioned this yesterday.
Where did you go? At Derry?
Hanover?
Lake.
Okay, that's a nice one. Those are big guys. But the flavor ones, some of them are large, some of them aren't that large.
How many
you went all the way up to the top?
Yes, yeah. Approximately how many stories is the one, the average one that you do?
We have a smaller one that you do.
Yeah, well, you have anything from, I don't know, the largest one is a couple hundred pounds an hour. You know, you're not talking about the smallest ones. They have little pilot, what they call lab ones, that can do like a half a pound an hour.
It could be almost like a tabletop model.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
You allow Bittel by flavor companies?
No. Okay. Going through this. Setting up a company, what we go through it. First thing is you want to do is control purchasing and receiving. Next thing you want to go is control revision. Revision means if they want to go in and revise, change a formula after it's been certified, they're not allowed to do, go and institute, to go and put in place that revision until they get written approval from the office. Makes sense, right? Because you're dealing with a facility that has different procedures. One of the most difficult things I have to control is Kavish. First of all, it's very confusing to them exactly. Okay, we want to make this one as kosher parv. So what do you want me to do? So this one sits for 24 hours. So, you know, what needs to end up happening is either they dedicate equipment, or what I've done elsewhere, hopefully successfully, is that anything which has tray for milchic ingredients, they have to go and pack off the same shift that they begin the blending. And in this way, the equipment never became milchic or tray in the first place from the kavash.
Pack off,
meaning it's a drum off, meaning they have to go and take off of the production equipment. If they keep it in a drum that they're delivering to the customer, which is a new drum and they're not going to reuse the drum, so it doesn't bother me if it's sitting in the drum, the finished good drum, more than 24 hours. But if they're going to have a production vessel, tank, that they're going to have a product sitting more than 24 hours, so then become milchix. And then next have the next one sitting there more than 24 hours. So it might not be a problem that you have it, but it is a problem. It might be a problem that you have it as well, because many of these products have alcohol in it. Alcohol is charif, the machil l'shvach. Oh, you use machmer after 24 hours, not quicker than that, right? Yeah, that's it.
I have to say, if it's charif, then after 18 minutes, you
I'll so they're only machmer that they're not machmer that's like chaimitz only after 24 hours. That's and but they are machmer. It will be machmer l'shvach.
Okay.
What?
Sorry, it has to be tzir. You're saying it's not.
Yeah.
Aren't these things very? I mean, what kind of person are we talking about? I mean, are these light? They're not some kind.
The tanks.
How do you
monitor
these things?
Pack off means that they have to go in and drum off or take out the liquid out of the container, the vessel, which they were using, processing it in. The biggest problem is at the end of the day they leave and they say, you know, goodbye, I'm leaving for the weekend, then they haven't yet finished drumming off. Drumming off is just a lingo, packing into drums or to pails, whatever they're putting off, shipping out the liquid to the customer. How do you monitor kavish? So which this is something, you know, you have the mashgiach dropping in, you check production schedules and histories, and you keep on going, chasing it over, and
why is only if they reuse the drum?
No,
this is in
no.
The,
this
in
is
the
for the tanks or the that they use to go and blend the product in. Most often, I will go and see that they will go and they send me the complete manufacturing direction to most places, and will say allow it to sit for 24 or 48 hours to allow the product to separate. And when it then I write with you, okay, this is sitting 24 or 48 hours. Which equipment is it being done in? What else is being done in this equipment? We're going to need to either have this product requiring signature. That we kosher the tank before you do this product, or you have to go and come up with a system that is verifiable that I'm going to be able to go and see what else is being done on this piece of equipment. Otherwise, very often companies will have barcodes on their ingredients, meaning that they'll have a barcode every time they receive an ingredient in off the truck. They'll go through their quality checks, they'll then assign a barcode to this product. Some companies will assign their own lot number. Some companies will use the lot number of the manufacturer. The reason why they like using the manufacturer's lot number is because if there's a recall, so they have to file with the manufacturers. Whereas if they assign their own lot number, so they might have assigned their own lot number to more than one lot from the manufacturer. Today, in the computer age, nowadays they assign their own lot number and they keep on track on the computer someplace the lot number of the manufacturer. they put on the barcode. They're also supposed to do the kosher check at that time to go and see if it meets its kosher specification. Then when they do the compounding for the flavor, they go and they scan this, the formula. The formula is the list of ingredients with directions of how to go and make the formula. And then they go, after scanning the formula, they will go and pull those ingredients, scan it, and they'll meter off, they'll take out exactly how much they need of that ingredient. They have to do it on a scale, they have to weigh the material beforehand, they have to weigh it afterwards, and then they put it into the container, the blank container. This obviously is a manual system, that not one of the automatic systems. What I've been trying to encourage companies to do, and I'm also making progress in this, is that not only should they have barcodes on the formulas relating to ingredients, but also on the equipment, so that I can go and have better tracking as far as which equipment is being used and be able to track coverage issues better. That's one of the something I'm trying to work on. Any questions?
These automatic systems.
Yes.
They must be only for the standard. They can't have 3,000 pipes going to all the different.
A couple hundred.
They really have that many pipes.
Yeah. Well, I've seen like 400. Yeah.
Being used in one item?
Well, in a meaning, it's a it's basically a chamber about the width of this room, about twice the length. They have on an elevated platform the drums of the raw materials, and it's gravity fed down, so they don't have to have any pumps. I've even seen that they have what's called hot boxes, or things which are heated, and then the lines have to be a little bit traced to go and keep them liquid. It comes down the product, they scan the formula, they put down the pail or whatever, the drum that it's going to go into on this like track, like a railroad track. It will then go back and forth this drum to each one of the ingredients that it's supposed to pick up the raw materials, and as it goes by each one of them, it'll get a spritz, you know, of what it's supposed to. And that's how it works.
Okay,
I think. What time are we supposed to put the
meeting?
Hold on. Okay.
So, what does costuming entail in these plants?
Okay, so you're going to be costuming either what's called a spray dryer or reactors. A reactor is nothing more than a large pressure cooker. The reason why they call it a reactor is they'll be doing reactions using usually amino acids.
Those are the two complicated.
A reactor is not complicated to kosher. You fill it and you boil it. It's steam jacketed, meaning it has a double wall on the outside of it, which has steam in it. There's no problem koshering that.
Is it drained or doesn't it?
The steam in the facility, we keep on top of what goes on with the steam. You know, that's a separate issue dealing with the utilities.
You have a run that has compatible ingredients.
If you have compatible ingredients, so the mashgiach needs to be present for when they use the compatible ingredients. He communicates his presence by stamping the label with his signature stamp for the product that uses it. That's how, in other words, the customer, the cookie company, right, that goes and buys this flavor, they're going to get a letter of kosher certification for this flavor. It'll either say it's kosher when bearing the OU emblem, or it'll say kosher when bearing the OU emblem, but it'll also need the signature of the rabbi. If it needs the signature of the rabbi, their receiving department, that cookie company, needs to check when they receive that flavor. If it doesn't, they have to reject it, because the mashgiach might. What happens? Something.
On a commercial level. What about on a retail level?
You won't know.
Same.
You have no idea. This is all dust.
These
all these.
You're walking to the supermarket and buy flavors.
Yeah.
What?
Are the companies producing these flavors on demand for kosher consumers? These special runs, are they special?
They're being done for the but it's not being done for consumers, for the manufacturers of. Yeah. Yeah.
So
but you know, very often.
If they request a kosher, will they make these runs? Otherwise.
Well, it depends which where. And meaning you'll have pretty much in the U.S. the large flavor manufacturers, as a rule, will develop products which are kosher, and they'll stay away from non-kosher ingredients, and they know which substitute kosher ingredients can substitute for non-kosher ingredients.
And
the reason for that, why it's so widespread, is not because there are so many Jews eating kosher, but there's somewhat of a pyramid effect, meaning the following. If you have one cookie you want to go and make kosher, but you're making other cookies on the same production line, so you need to go and keep that production line kosher. So the flavors in that the other cookies need to also be kosher, even though you weren't planning on doing it as kosher. And that, therefore, for flavor companies in the U.S. to go and be in business, they have to go and have a kosher program.
And so when one of the Hasidish Hashkafas or the Haredi Hashkafas in Eretz Yisrael, when they want to use the flavors, which I assume are by and large coming from here, so do they personally check it out, or they're all samech on the OU with these flavors?
Yes, yes.
What do they look for?
Who's they? Who's they? I can't speak for other people. I can't speak for other people. I
can just say what kind of shayla, what kind of questions, what kind of shayla come up.
So you're gonna, the first thing you're interested in is the ingredients, right? That's the very first thing. You want to know the ingredients. You know, it's a food pyramid, right?
Right.
You have your cookie at the top, right? And then you have the flavors in between. You have your emulsifiers, your oils, your other things. And then at the very bottom, you're going to have the very basic raw materials that are used in the flavors. If you understand how those basic raw materials are made, you understand whether they do need hashgacha or don't need hashgacha. That's the aleph beis. The very first thing you look at is the ingredients, pashas. Second thing is you look at is the equipment, right? Whether you need kashering, we don't need kashering. Third thing you look at is utilities. Utilities means the steam, which is recirculating through the facility, and also cooling water, if it's applicable. Meaning, steam, for the efficiency of heating tanks, they'll use steam to heat those tanks that's heated in a central boiler. That steam, when it hits a cold tank, it will condense back into water. The water might be above 100 degrees Celsius, whatever, it might be above the 212 Fahrenheit because it's under pressure, but it still will be condensed back into water. That condensed water, as a rule, will go back to the boiler. For sure, will go back to the boiler house in a large operation. In the boiler house, either it will be used to go back into the boiler itself to be reheated, or it will go and be used to preheat the new water and in a heat exchanger. Heat exchanger is basically exactly that. It exchanges the temperature that you had in the old water and giving it to the new water, and then they'll use that new water in the boiler. That's and therefore, if you have a condensate return, the condensed steam being returned back to the boiler, this is a shayla that needs to be dealt with. Another area of concern is if you have cooling water being returned, meaning if you have a distillation column, for example, or if you have reactions that you need to go and stop the reaction, or if you have a distillation column. So in a distillation column, right, you have different things have different boiling points. So as you boil them off, they come up through, they vaporize. you then want to go and recover that vapor and turn it back into liquid. So then as it comes up, it goes through cold water in order to go and vaporize back into liquid and comes back down the different fractions, the different parts at the different boiling points. So that cooling water is now, could become treif in the same way. So you have to go and deal with those things. So it's basically three things you're looking at: ingredients, equipment, and you're also looking at the utilities.
When was the last time you had to trap a company, and why, like the Bopi?
There have been cases. Can't really discuss them. Actually went to an interesting place yesterday. Maybe you can give me some more ideas of how you would have dealt with this. The place was supposed to have had a mashgiach present because they had compatible of the same item, meaning they had a item which could be made either kosher or treif. Now, the kosher path of going and using it would go and have one color. If you go and make the treif, it had a different color. And that would be make a difference not only in the raw material but also in the finished good that this place was making. My concern was not that they'd used 100% of the treif and they substituted. They messed up. They did not call the mashgiach. They made 1,000 kilo of this. The person who was the kosher contact was out on vacation. And they came back to me and they said, do we need to make another production or not? So I asked them for the following. My concern was not that they would have substituted 100% of the treif to the kosher. I should just also add as a sideline that even if it would have this quote-unquote treif, it's called something called marine-derived glucosamine, which though you in truth allows for medical purposes, it's used for people who have arthritis. So you even allows the medical, the marine-derived from shells, crustacean shells, to be used for... so though you will certify that as kosher, however, they wanted a blanket certificate. I wasn't going and delving in exactly who their customers would ultimately be, whether they would need it. And they had a molasses-based glucosamine, which had the same chemical profile, but had, once again, actually had a different weight, and it also had a different color. My concern was not that they had substituted 100% of the treif for the kosher, but rather that they would have cut, meaning instead of going in and using 100%, they would have used less of it.
The treif is cheaper.
The treif was cheaper, yes. I asked for the invoices, I went through the pricings. One was this amount, it was cheaper. The treif was around $10 a kilo. The kosher was around $14 a kilo. Oh, it's a price difference. But the reason why they had wanted to make a kosher production was because their customer asked specifically for them to go and use the molasses-based glucosamine. And they also had a product specification sheet which said on it exactly what they're going to... The glucosamine, which was molasses based, and it used actually the brand name of the manufacturer of the glucosamine. They also had, I looked at the batch sheet, which they didn't know exactly how I would, all these things I asked for when I was in the plant. Sometimes you can ask for so much information, you can ask for it beforehand, and they can go and put it together. They don't even realize what you're going to be doing with it. But all of this information I asked for when I was in the plant, I actually looked at the batch sheet. And the batch numbers that they used of the raw materials. And based upon that, we were able to go and approve it as is.
But you wouldn't find them or do something else? You just had
In this case, it was something that they messed up. It was a major hassle for them. It delayed their delivery a good while. they couldn't go and deliver the product because we had a signature requirement on this product. If they would have delivered it to the customer, it would have been out of spec. So it was a major hassle for them. They Misabi ended up having to pay more because they had to go and pay for the Mashiach to come in. It was Misabi a learning, you know, they learned from the whole deal. I ended up getting them to write a procedure how to deal with in the future. It shouldn't be messed up in the future. They should go and communicate better. Okay, any questions?
Is there any such thing as a flavor house that's dedicated to kosher?
That's what?
It's all the ingredients are kosher.
Not a sophisticated one. Meaning, you can have a... yeah, you could have it. But it's not very sophisticated.
Is there any difference in health benefits between artificial and natural flavors?
Yeah, that's question. One of the things that, you know, if they write artificial on a flavor, right? It doesn't mean that the stuff is artificial. It could be the stuff is natural. Well, at Masada Lacha, that could be, I mean, whatever. It doesn't mean it comes from petrochemical sources if they write on it artificial. It could be comes from natural sources, right?
Okay, so it depends on the product.
No, so what my point is, people have a very bad mistake, which is really stupid part of me, that they think if it says artificial, oh, Puskenzine's right. What do you mean Puskenzine? Who says they're going to put in artificial? They won't. They can't put in they can't put in, when they write natural, they can put in artificial. But they're artificial, they can put in natural. Right?
Well, whether it's artificial, people want natural more. Why
do they have to? If they come out with a cheaper way to make it through a natural process.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they could have did it. Well, Misa, let's say they have that it's not approved as, neck recognized as being natural, right? I mean, whatever, like in Europe they have something else. They have something called nature identical, which means that it's really from artificial means. It's a synthetic process, but it's nature identical. Any questions? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.